Oh, such a good question.
Well, when you come with these questions, that's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand.Life show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
Welcome back to another version of the Your Living Brand.Live show. This is Ben Baker coming to you, and welcome to another episode. This week, we have AJ Wilcox coming to us from B2Linked. Now, AJ is a LinkedIn expert. He is the guy that you really want to sit down and you want to listen to over the next 35 minutes because this is what he does. Doesn't do Facebook, doesn't worry about Google Ads. He sits there and all he does is LinkedIn. And it's better to sit there and listen to an expert that can sit there and go, okay, is this right for me? And if it is, how do we do it right? So, AJ, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. We tried to do this once. It didn't work out well, but you know what? We scrapped the audio on that one and did it again, and I love having you here. So thanks for being patient with me as I was getting over this cold.
Oh, absolutely. Happy to be.
Now, what I want to talk to you about first is this show is all about who are you, what do you do, why do you do it, who do you do it for, and why do they care? It's about what's your story. So let's start off with the story of AJ and the story of B2Linked, and give me a little history before we get into this show.
Sure. It started out as me in college, got into digital marketing because I was studying marketing, but I was working a technology job where I was getting paid more than anyone else on campus. And I went, okay, well, I don't want to leave tech. And one of my guest lecturers stood up and started talking about search engine optimization. That was exactly it for me. It was, wow, this is technology plus marketing. That's what I want to do for the rest of my life. So I went up after class and begged that poor man for an internship. And that kind of started my career into it. I started out doing search engine optimization, Google Ads, building websites, that type of thing, and just really liked it. Then about 5 years later, I was brought in as the digital marketing manager, running all digital marketing for a local technology company who was just got VC funded. And so they had money. And on my very first day talking to the CMO, where I was laying out my strategies that I wanted to implement, she stopped me and said, okay, all that sounds great. Go ahead and implement it. But just so you know, we started a pilot 2 weeks ago with LinkedIn ads. See what you can do. And I saluted and said, yes, ma'am, absolutely. Walked out of her office and went, what are LinkedIn ads? I've never heard of them. They must be terrible if I haven't heard of them. But I didn't want to look stupid to my new boss. So I went and jumped into the platform. Then about 2 weeks later, I had a sales rep come up to me. He introduced himself and said, AJ, we are fighting over your leads. Keep it up, whatever you're doing. And I went, what are you talking about? So I logged into the CRM system that was recording all the leads, looked at the leads he was talking about, and all of them were sourced from LinkedIn at that point. And that was not the only channel I was running. So I took it at that point going, ooh, there's something to this. If this one channel is producing all of the leads that the sales team loves, maybe I should keep investing. And I did. I grew that account to become LinkedIn's largest spending customer worldwide.
And, wow.
Yeah. Ran that account for about 2 years, 2.5 years. And then at that point went, yeah, there are probably more companies than just this one that need LinkedIn ads because no one was talking about it. No one was asking questions. LinkedIn ads was just like it didn't exist and I was killing it. So I decided to start an agency that's all we do.
That's crazy because LinkedIn has been around in the grand scheme of things, what, 12, 14 years now at the outset.
Yeah.
The world has changed. I mean, the world has changed dramatically. I mean, everybody knows about Facebook ads. People are understood about the Google ads. And they realize, they say, okay, you either dabble in them and you do them poorly, or you really educate yourself and you figure it out, or you hire somebody and you do it well. But LinkedIn ads for a lot of companies are sitting there going, oh, they're expensive. They don't work. They're not something that's going to be good for our company. And I want to sit there and say, okay, you worked for a company that killed it with LinkedIn ads, that absolutely killed it with LinkedIn, obviously, because you wouldn't be using that kind of spend on LinkedIn if you didn't. So the question is, why would somebody want to look at LinkedIn ads versus a Google ads versus a Facebook ads? What type of company is going to see value in it?
Yeah, I'll take it away. The LinkedIn ads, the whole special part about it is LinkedIn knows everything about us professionally. They know our job title, what company we're at, what size of company, who we're connected in, what we're interested in, what skills we have, what groups we're members of, and it just goes on and on and on. And so if you're in the type of company where, let's say there's a very specific type of user who would be, you know, your ideal customer, if it's a business person, chances are you can narrow very closely, tightly down on them. So LinkedIn's going to give you the leads that are exactly the right people, the people you would be, you know, we call it spearfishing, the ones that you're most excited to put their logo on your website when you're done. Whereas Facebook, the targeting, it's certainly a lot cheaper. The targeting is a lot broader. So think of it like a shotgun versus sniper rifle. Sniper rifle, expensive bullet, but it's kind of a one and done. Facebook, it's like shotgun. You spread it really wide and a few BBs are going to hit your target, but the rest is going to kind of fall around it. So I think Facebook is really good for companies who are just trying to test, trying to understand, what do I have? Who's interested in it? But at some point, they're going to come to LinkedIn because their sales reps will start telling them, hey, we're getting a lot of really low quality leads here. Can you like tighten this up? And that's where LinkedIn all of a sudden starts to make a ton of sense. Google specifically, it is really good. I definitely think that people should be using search channels like Google and Bing and SEO, because what they do is they bring the people to you who are already looking for you. They're showing intent by their query. They're looking for the type of product and service you do. So they're going to bring in these deals that close tomorrow. These are ready buyers, but you have no control over who they are. So sales team may say they're lower quality leads, but they close fast. And it's pretty good to have a variety to your sales team, but certainly LinkedIn is, you know, think of it like the sniper rifle. It's much more valuable for hitting the exact right people.
So when you're talking to an initial client, what are the things that you're looking for? What are the keywords you're looking for? What's the phraseology? What's the thought process? What's the strategy of these companies that make them right for LinkedIn ads? Because they're not right for everybody. Because as you said,
correct,
they are expensive. If you look at them, it's like, I look at it as like email versus direct mail. You know, direct mail, if you can do a targeted direct mail campaign that is actually printed out, variable printed, and sniper attacked to individual people, I've gotten 45, 55, 65% response rates on those, which is impossible via email. It's absolutely impossible. So the question is, when does it make sense to bring out that sniper rifle, load in the great big cartridge, and go elephant hunting?
Cool. So I have four qualifications that I use anytime someone asks me about LinkedIn ads. So number one, I want to know that their audience is there. So can you describe who your ideal person is by their job title, their company size, their industry, those types of things? And if we know that your audience is there, that's kind of tick one. Tick two is, I want to know that you have a large enough deal size or lifetime value of your customer so that if you're paying for LinkedIn's expensive clicks up front, I want to know for sure you're going to see a return on your investment. And so in my mind, I'm like, $10,000, $15,000 more as a lifetime value. LinkedIn ads are a total no-brainer. If you're less than that, then whoa, you better make sure that you're testing properly and that your funnel is really tight. Of course, there are people who are making it work with much smaller deal sizes and lifetime values, but that's kind of where I set my minimum at. Number three, I want to know what type of content you have. Do you have like, are you hoping to just send someone right to an ad that says, click here to talk to our sales rep? Because no one's going to click that. You won't get any leads. But
no, like trust.
Exactly. But if you have that type of content that can get people to know, like, and trust you, let's say you have a free checklist or a cheat sheet that really solves a pain point for your customers. It's really insightful. Or you're throwing a free webinar or a free in-person event in their area where you're going to have drinks and happy hour and all that. These are the types of things where people go, all right, I know if I give my email address, someone's going to follow up, but I'm willing to do that because this is too good to pass up.
Right.
And then number four, like, you got to have enough budget to know whether or not it's working. So what I tell people is it's usually within about $3,000 to $5,000 in spend before you get enough conversions that your data becomes statistically significant. And so if you're working with an agency like ours that has a minimum cost associated with managing it, then I tell people, well, make sure you're spending that $3,000 to $5,000 per month. And that way, by the end of each month, you can evaluate results and say, yes, this is working. We should keep going or scale up. Or no, it sucks. We should fire AJ.
Right. And we don't want people to fire AJ.
Yeah. Hey, if it's not working, I don't want you spending your money on LinkedIn.
All right. So let's look at me as a case study, because I do a couple things. You know, I've got the workshops and the consulting, but I'm just in the process of building an online series of courses that match my two-day workshops. And the two-day workshops started about $25,000 US, but the online courses are going to be about $500 a person. And what I'm looking to do is sell them as site licenses for large organizations. So yeah, that way we can look at it, sit there and say, all right, you may have 1,000, 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 employees. You may not be able to afford to have me come in and teach your people 25 people at a time at $25,000, but you may be able to afford a site license for your 10,000 people to be able to have it on a yearly license basis. So my question is, if I'm looking at B2B companies, if I'm looking for companies 1,000 plus, 1,000 to 10,000 people, I know that I'm looking for VP HRs or people who run the type of role, am I looking at the right thing? And what are the things that I should be thinking about when I'm starting this type of campaign?
Yeah, I think you already know where you want to end people up. You're either having them buy a larger site license or dropping them in the 25K two-day workshop. And that's great. On both of those, you have a very significant end to your funnel. And so you can work back from there, figure out what is it that people need to invest in, invest their time, invest money into for this to be worthwhile. And I think getting someone from a free webinar is probably a great start. You know, you're already coaching, teaching, training. You already have these materials. So buying GoToWebinar for a month to put something on to test, that would be a really low investment. And then you want to make sure that you drop enough knowledge on them that they say, this was great. This was life-changing. Now I'm ready for the next step. And then I don't know if the next step is buy our $500 training course from there, or if there needs to be another step after that. But I certainly think that you're ideal. Those VPs of HR, people who are over learning and development, those people are certainly reachable on LinkedIn. And the cool part about that audience specifically is HR people live on LinkedIn. They're surfing around all day long. And so it creates a lot of ad inventory, which brings costs down for everyone. So if you're going after personas like HR and sales who live on the platform, you'll end up paying usually a dollar or two less per click than pretty much everyone else on the platform. So it's a great audience altogether.
Perfect. But my question is, if I'm hiring an agency like yours, and you said you're about $3,000 a month, I guess, for your fees, and then another $3,000 to $5,000 on top of that. Realistic, am I looking at 3 months, 6 months, 9 months before I'm starting to see the type of ROI where I'm starting to see 10X, on my money? Because you need to sit there and say, all right, there's a lot of upfront investment. There's not only an investment with you, it's creation of funnels, it's creation of time, it's the back and forth things. So there's a lot of money set aside to be able to set this thing up properly and to let it run.
True.
So realistically, you say, okay, 1 month, have the 5,000 upfront, then we can fire AJ. Well, that's not realistic. What's a realistic timeline to be able to look forward to? And, how do you manage your customers through that? Because people sit there and say, well, AJ, we're spending a lot of money. Where's the results? How come we're spending so much money? We're not getting any results out of this. How do you manage that through and how do you set the expectations?
Yeah, excellent question. When we're running ads, we get metrics all the way down the funnel. And the more we have at the top, the more we're going to have down below. So when we very first start a campaign, if we're in during month one, let's say in the first 3 or 4 days, we're not looking to have deals closed. We're looking to see if people are even clicking on the ad. So our metric for the first 3 or 4 days is going to be click-through rate. And that might sound funny because click-through rate means nothing to anyone, except for us, it tells us, is our message a match with our audience? And if so, we can get our costs down per click and we can actually get some traffic.
Right.
Then after about a week, 2 weeks, I mean, depending a little bit on your budget, we'll start to have a meaningful number of conversions, people who've signed up for something. And then when you have enough of those, then you start looking at how many of those hopped on the phone with you or how many of those were downloaded a secondary asset. And then after that, you look how many people got a proposal. And then after that, you're looking for how many people actually closed. So let's say that whole process, it takes 6 months for you to sign a really big deal. During month one, you're caring about conversions. Month two, it might be more like maybe conversions plus appointments. Month three might be all about appointments. Month four. And so you can make the call if you're looking at it during month three and you go, man, no appointments are coming in and we've spent, you know, $6,000 a month for the last, you know, 2-3 months, you'd be okay to cut it off because you know something's inefficient there in your funnel and you probably need to fix it. But certainly you look for whatever metric you have enough data on to understand, is it graduating at a high enough rate to the next stage of the funnel? And then even if deals aren't happening during month three, you know that you're at least on trajectory to get there. You're efficiently getting people to a metric you do care about, which is phone appointments.
Right. So are you managing the entire funnel process in terms of being able to have the, okay, once you hooked them, once you got them involved, getting them on the secondary email and the third email and the fourth email and making sure that all those things are that? Are you helping to build those funnels out to make sure that those conversations are ongoing and happening? Or are you just there getting people into the top of the funnel? Like, where do you start and where do you end?
We are really insanely good at getting people into the top of the funnel. Everything past that kind of turns into a sales role. And you can probably tell I'm a crappy sales guy. So I tend to tell people like, hey, let sales take it over as soon as it gets into their court. We've seen a lot of different clients. You know, we've spent $110 million on the platform and run ads managed for over 330 different accounts at this point. So I can certainly consult and we can share what we think and how it approaches benchmark and all that. But testing to find what it is to get people into the top of the funnel from our ads is kind of where we functionally cease. And then after that, it's up for the client to figure out what does step 2, 3, 4 look like through the sales process.
Right. So when you're bringing a new client on board and you're working with them through the strategy, who within the organization are you working with and what are the typical things? How does the first month, 2 months, 3 months go in terms of building this out so it's successful?
Ooh, excellent. When we start, we're either dealing with someone who's in the marketing department in larger companies, and in smaller companies, it's actually the business owner themselves. And the larger the organization, the lower seniority you're dealing with. So if you're dealing with someone from a Fortune 500, you might be dealing with a specialist or a manager. And so our clients kind of range all over the place. But what we do during the onboarding process is we treat your account, even if you say that your budget's only $3,000 a month, we treat your account like it's going to be a Fortune 500, something that can really scale one day. So we're building the account in a way where rather than just creating two campaigns and running ads, we might create 10, 15, 20 campaigns. And it's a little bit like buying a Ferrari just to drive to the grocery store. Like maybe it's overbuilding, but we do that because if the client comes back to us during month two or month three and says, this is working great, double it or triple it or quintuple it, we have very simple levers that we twist and overnight we're getting you to scale. So that's our specialty is, you know, very high functioning, high volume accounts. And certainly we can help with the smaller ones too, but that's how we plan to build it out. So during month one, we're testing any assets you have. During month two, we're testing new assets. Or if you don't have new assets, we'll refresh our ad copy, refresh the ad creative to make it still look like it's new to these audiences so that we can keep testing. And then we start getting the data involved. You know, if you can tell us how many sales qualified leads, how many proposals went out, how many closes came from our efforts, then we can start optimizing our funnel towards, even if campaign A looks inexpensive, it's not closing or not booking appointments. So we're going to run ad or offer B instead. Those are the types of decisions we can make going on. And then it's just a constant optimization we have clients we've worked with now for over 4 years who are some of LinkedIn's top spending accounts worldwide. And we're still running the same formula. It's still ad refreshes every month to the same audiences, trying to keep things fresh, but we're always finding efficiencies, audiences we can exclude, new ways of reaching them, reminding them. So yeah, you can keep going after that.
Well, it reminds me from I started off in direct mail 25 years ago. It's the same philosophy of A-B testing. You can't just throw 100% of everything into one bucket and hope for the best. You need to sit there and say, okay, we've got A, B, C, D test. We're going to run A against B, okay? B is working better than A. Great. Significantly better. Yes. Get rid of A. Now we're going to run B against C. All right. If B is still better than C, fine. Then we're going to run B against D and be able to tweak it out. But you always need to be testing. You always need to be sitting there going, is this going to resonate with my audience?
Yeah. Oh,
does this resonate with this audience versus the other one resonates with another audience? Because people in Amarillo, Texas are going to respond differently than somebody in New York City or LA. And being able to have that nuance to be able to sit there and say, look, we're going to target the San Fernando Valley, these particular people, and we're going to target them this way. That's where the sniper rifle comes out. So I look at you and sit there and say, how do you go and decide with the client which markets to go with and how to communicate differently across different markets?
Well, if they've done a good job with their asset, they've created something that truly is interesting to their ideal customer, there's all kinds of exercises we can do to make sure we're reaching the right customer. It could be they just tell us job titles and then we go and research. It could be that they give us the LinkedIn profile links to their top 10 favorite customers, and we go and look for commonalities between them and try to build that out. But the audiences we can settle on, and we can create enough micro segments of that audience. So over time, we can find the pieces that work great and are their ideal customer, and those that kind of fail out and we want to pause and turn off. Then on the actual creative side, we are testing often enough that the message looks fresh, because we know if you keep showing the same ad to people month over month, eventually they're going to kind of get sick of it. So that testing process of you run an A-B test to understand what resonates better, but then you switch it up fast enough that people don't get tired of the winner, because it will eventually turn into a loser.
Right. So what are the things that you see that work well and certain things that don't work well on the LinkedIn program? Because there's got to be certain things you sit there going, yeah, don't do that. Or we're just not going to go there. So Let's start off with that. What are the things that you see that are just like, Mr. Customer, we're just not going to go there because we know that that's just not going to work?
Yeah, everything is a little bit nuanced because there are cases where things like this could work. But in general, you have those clients who say, I want to push people right to the bottom of the funnel and push them to a sales rep. We go, okay, 95% of the time, this is going to fail, but we'll let the client do that if that's what they really want. Sometimes we'll have clients go exactly the opposite direction where they say, yeah, we want to build trust with them and get this brand recognition. So let's spend the $6 to $9 a click that LinkedIn costs to and send people to our blog post where we're not asking for anything. And inevitably, when you're sending traffic to a blog post or an infographic or something like that, they have very weak calls to action, which means they're going to have a very low conversion rate. And if you go that route, you are definitely being like a good medicine, if you will. You're giving people something that's valuable and you're not asking for anything, and that you will build up goodwill, but you won't be able to track it and tell, because you're going to end up with like a $500 or $1,000 cost per lead. And at some point, you've got to report that to your boss or the CEO or the board and explain why you've got $1,000 cost per lead.
Well, so, if you're selling them Lear jets, you know, if you're selling them a $40 million Lear jet, that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can afford to waste some money at the top of the funnel to build that goodwill in hopes that you get someone to come out the bottom. So certainly like the Fortune 500, they're the ones who are sending people to blog posts and ungated content. But the vast majority of other people start with some kind of gated content that really, truly is valuable. Like if you were your prospect, you'd say, yeah, I'm willing to give up my email address for that. And if you can find that asset that converts at 20% or above, you know you've got a winner.
Right. And what are the things that you look at especially with the size of the graphic, with people on mobile phones more and more and more, what do you do in terms of visuals and messaging when you're dealing with a square inch or less of space on a typical iPhone 7 or whatever to be able to get somebody's attention? How do you recommend that you utilize that space to really, really get yourself noticed in a really crowded space?
Well, you know that on mobile and on desktop for that matter, the color palette that people are going to be used to seeing is lots of blues, grays, and whites. So the very first thing, the job of your image is not to convert someone. The job of your image is to get enough attention so that they will bother to read the ad copy you wrote. So the very first thing we say is make sure your image has bright tones that contrast against LinkedIn's color palette. So lots of oranges, reds, greens, pinks, purples, yellows, those types of colors will jump off the page. So that's number one, make sure that it's bright. And then number two, you want it to, you know, 9 times out of 10, you want it to look very organic. You don't want it to look like it was made by a marketing department. So don't overlay buttons with shading and have really attractive text overlays. Instead, make it look like it's a post in their feed so that they will look and pay attention and not just gloss over it. One of the best images that we've ever seen perform was the client happened to get a picture of their CEO on stage talking at like an all hands or some conference or something, but they got the CEO pointing to something while the CEO was talking. And what they did is they positioned the image such so that the CEO was pointing to the button that,
perfect,
that was the call to action. And wow, did that work. So I know it sounds silly, but a little bit gimmicky, but try it out. It works.
Oh yeah. I mean, we just created a funnel page, and to get people to actually push button on the video, we actually put a red arrow pointing down to that. And it does. It looks silly and gimmicky, but you know what? The conversion rate went through the roof. You know, yeah. People go, oh, I'm supposed to click here because the arrow says so. It's those little things that if you guide people gently, it's amazing the things that come out of it.
Oh, yeah. Gimmicky, as long as it doesn't cross the line into like hurting your brand, looking cheapy. Fantastic. Like everyone should do it.
Well, and let's get into that in terms of brand looking cheapy, because companies spend a lot of money and a lot of effort protecting their brand image and their color scheme and their visual identity, etc. And companies like mine, my colors are blue and gray. Those are my company colors. And you're right. They do not pop on a typical LinkedIn ad. So would you suggest that I just use an opposite color palette and sit there and say, you know what? I know it's not my brand colors. I know it's not that, but it's going to get far more eyeballs. And I'm just going to have to live with it on this small ad to get attention, rather than to sit there and say, I'm going to be maniacal about my brand colors and all of a sudden just not have it be something that people recognize or want to relate to.
Yeah, most of the brands we've worked with, they have an accent color or something else in their color palette that we could bring out. So if it's something like a red or a yellow, then when you post, you just try to make the image have significant deep saturation amounts of the accent color, and you can still stay pretty close to on brand. With companies like yours where you run it, you can flex the rules a little bit. If you're at a very established company, chances are they would say, we understand we're going to pay $3 more per click by not having an image that's off brand, but that's a price we're willing to pay to uphold our brand, and then it's okay. But certainly anything that can get the cost down per contact helps, in my estimation, for your entire advertising program.
So talking about bringing the cost down, what are some of the typical things that you can do to bring the cost down per click? You know, you talked about, you know, going after HR people and salespeople can bring the cost down per click. But what are some typical things that people can do to be able to make sure that their budget is maximized?
Oh, I love this question. This is what we're especially skilled at, is maximizing people's budgets. Because LinkedIn is so expensive, we love to stretch every dollar as far as we can.
And we appreciate that.
Yeah, good. So the way that this works is LinkedIn's ad system is run as an auction. And it's not just, I'm willing to pay $6 and my competitor's willing to pay $5. So my ad's going to get shown all the time. It's a little bit more nuanced than that. What LinkedIn and all the other ad platforms, for that matter, what they're looking for, let's say same scenario. I'm willing to pay $6. My competitor's willing to pay $5. But if their ad gets clicked on 30% more than mine, then all of a sudden, even though they're bidding less, LinkedIn goes, oh, we still make more money over the long run when we show his or her ad. So that's this metric that they call relevancy score. They're weighting everyone's bid against how often you make us money. And so what it really comes down to is click-through rate. If you can find an ad or come up with an ad that gets clicked on significantly more than average or significantly more than a competitor's, you can afford to lower your bid and say, we're going to pay less. Each click is worth less to us, and LinkedIn will still keep showing you above your competition. So that's the goal. Come with good creative that you can bid the least amount possible and still spend the entire budget that you brought to the platform.
Right. So it's a matter of utilizing the dollars more effectively by sitting there going, if I have better ads, if I have ads that are going to click through more, LinkedIn's going to like me better.
Yes. Yeah. Which is kind of interesting, especially considering that when you take LinkedIn's advice, if you just go through the campaign creation process and select the defaults, if you do that on Facebook, you're usually pretty protected. Facebook has a pretty kind auction. But if you do it on LinkedIn, you will inevitably be paying something like $14, $15, $20 per click, whereas you shouldn't be paying more than like 6 to 10 maybe on the low end. So yeah, just don't follow their guidelines necessarily. Just start by bidding really low.
Yeah. Do you have like a top 10 tips and tricks? Is there a document you have that has top 10 tips and tricks? Or?
Ooh, there's not. I speak all over the world on LinkedIn ads. And so I have a deck that I'll give, like, here's my best advice. But it's not a document that we could point anyone to. I am going to be doing a webinar here pretty soon with another company. I can send you the link to that when the link to register's live.
That would be great.
It's a straight Q&A. It's like, AJ, share with us your top 10. We're probably not going to have time to get through all 10, but your top 10 things that no one knows about LinkedIn ads and how you can use those to your advantage.
Well, hopefully we can put that in the show notes. You know, when the show goes live, people can link to that and be able to register for that.
I love it.
So here's one last thing that I ask everybody when they walk out the door. When you leave a meeting, when you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you and your company when you're not there?
Ooh, this may sound a little bit vain. When I leave, I want them to perceive me as like a scientifically testing expert. I want them to know that we're not just an agency who's just going to spend the budget they give. I want them to know that we're testing and we have data behind everything we do. Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. Sounds like I'm saying, when I drive away, I hope they think I'm smart. But I do. I want them to get the fact that this is data-based.
Well, it's also the fact that you're adding value. You know, it's the fact that you understand the metrics behind, I hate to call it a game, but it is in some respects a game. I mean, it's constantly changing. The rules change. The bar changes. And having somebody in your corner who lives this every single day and has the ability to sit there and say, okay, the rules have changed. By the way, Mr. Customer, we have to look at our strategy and change it slightly to be able to do that. You know, and here's the data that proves that. That's valuable. And in the end, you're being a great asset to your clients because you were able to do that, because you can read the data and see where the trends are going.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I hope that's the way I'm perceived, but who knows? We'll see. Any of my clients, feel free to chime in and let me know what you thought of me the first time we met.
There we go. AJ, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for being part of the show. Thanks for adding value. And I hope, you know, the listeners enjoyed every minute of this because I was taking notes through the whole thing.
Awesome, Ben. Well, I'm flattered to death that you'd even invite me. So thanks so much for having me on the show, especially for round two. I was worth a second shot.
Take care and have a great day.
You too.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at YourLivingBrand.com and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions, and leaders at any level. Contact us for a free 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you for listening and sharing. And tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?